talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marion way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange, read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on, turn on, I'm in, is on today, the Exchange Club.
Hey, it is a Getaway Friday here on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, and away we go. It is Memorial Day weekend. Now, let me tell you, it is raining cats and dogs here in Marion, and we're still going ahead. It's Memorial Day weekend, Friday, May the 28th, 2021, 16 minutes past the hour, and our man, Warren G. Harding, is on the porch. Bobby Ray, the Kazoo Man, is here as well, and he is going to be giving a front porch speech. If you are driving down Prospect Street right now, near the island in the road that separates Delaware Avenue from Prospect Street, you will be going back 101 years because Warren G. Harding is standing on the front porch about to give a speech. I'm going to have Adam cue him here, but we're going to turn it over to we're going to the front porch outside the WWGH studios right now to Warren G. Harding, who is preparing to give a front porch speech. If you're in the area here at down by Prospect Street, get ready. Warren G. Harding, go ahead.
Warren G. Harding here, as I stand on the front porch and in front of all of you. I know many of you have come and are standing in the rain to listen to a speech from Warren Harding. Well, I've got lots of them. I've got speech after speech. And in the next 45 minutes or so, and maybe with some musical interludes, I think we'll have a good time. Of course, I've been president for almost 90 days now, so it still feels very fresh. But it's really only been since November 2nd, that I was campaigning, and I spent months and months and months doing that, and it became second nature to me, almost more so than being president. So what I'd like to do is share with you a campaign speech, one of many that I gave throughout the campaign, but one that I gave from the front porch on 380 Mount Vernon Avenue to crowds of thousands again and again and again and again, delighted that so many people came to Marion to be part of the Front Porch campaign. So it's an excerpt really, because a campaign speech might be fairly long, but this is a piece of it. Good afternoon, my fellow Americans. It's a privilege to appear before you today. My Democratic political opponent, Governor James Cox, he recently described my speaking style as an army of pompous phrases parading around in search of an idea. Well, that may be a little harsh, but today I'm going to be a bit more direct than I usually am. So, in answer to that, let me give you an idea. A challenge to restore this great nation with a return to normalcy. Normalcy. That's a word that grates on the ear just a little bit. In fact, some of my critics accuse me of making up that word just to use it for the campaign, and that's not true. Normalcy is just an obscure word. It's a mathematical word, really, and it means something to be expected, a norm. It also just kind of hangs on the ear a little bit, which is why I've chosen that word to be a key component of the campaign, a return to normalcy. Because here we are. The terrible cataclysm of World War, the horrors that have set our nation in upheaval, a tidal wave of death and destruction, all of that, a direct result of President Wilson's policy of American neutrality. And what that did was leave the United States the world's unarmed giant, not even adequately prepared for our own defense. And now that that Great Wars conflict is at rest, the horrible price we pay for that peace is our entanglement in Wilson's League of Nations. You've heard a lot about League of Nations in the news. And on the surface, that sounds appealing, doesn't it? A League of Nations, a League of Nations devoted to the prevention of future wars. That's Wilson's project. But the price for that is one of the great disasters of the 20th century. The formation of a global super government in which the United States would surrender our sovereignty only to have our destiny controlled by a president of the world and other nations. But America, our America, the America builded on the foundation laid by the inspired fathers of our country, cannot be subservient to an alliance of other nations. We can enter into no political commitments, nor assume any economic obligations which will subject us to any other than our own authority. A world supergovernment, it's contrary to everything that made us what we are. We must safeguard America first. Prosper America first. Think of America first. Exalt America first. Live for and revere America first. Now to the maimed and the wounded soldiers across our nation, and there are thousands and thousands of you, a generous country will never forget the services you rendered. Which is why I propose the formation of a new Veterans Bureau. A bureau to provide a national network of new hospitals and clinics devoted exclusively to veterans care and recovery, so that those veterans suffering from casualties and disabilities, mustard gas burns, all of that shall be abundantly aided and restored to their highest capabilities. During the war, President Wilson and the Democrats removed protective tariffs, which brought about the economic recession that I predicted it would, and here we are in the middle of it. My economic policy will send American working men to the savings banks rather than the soup kitchens, and repeal the war taxes that we continue to pay even though we are a people now at peace. I believe in establishing a budget for the entire federal government, right down to the penny. Let me tell you, when I operated the Marion Star, a newspaper, and before there was such a thing as home delivery, you had to come to the office to get a copy, four cents a copy, most people at that time paid with pennies. And I collected those pennies in gallon jugs under the counter. Some may remember walk to the bank in downtown Marion with a gallon jug of pennies under each arm. Do you have any idea how many pennies are in a gallon jar? I do. 5,325. And it's going to take that level of scrutiny to hold the federal government accountable to a strict and balanced budget, once and for all. I believe in administrative efficiency, for lightened tax burdens, for the omission of unnecessary interference of government with business, and for more efficient business in government administration. I believe in establishing stricter standards for immigration, which are concerned with the future citizenship of this republic. I believe in the womanhood of America. Womanhood about to be enfranchised with the power to vote for the very first time. I'm committed to this measure of justice, and it's my earnest hope that the vote of every citizen shall be cast and counted in the approaching election. You see, America's present need is not heroics, but healing. Not nostrums, but normalcy. Not revolution, but restoration. Not agitation, but adjustment. Not surgery, but serenity. Not submergence in internationality, but sustainment in triumphant nationality. Our most dangerous tendency is to expect too much of government, while at the same time doing for it too little. When we have a citizenship that seeks what it may do for the government, rather than what the government may do for individuals, we shall do more to make democracy safe for the world than all of the armed conflict that history has ever recorded. Vote Harding in November.
All right, that is President Warren G. Harding on our porch here, giving a front porch speech here at WWGH Radio. Now we are going to go to Bobby Ray the Kazoo Man. We're going to return with Warren Harding right after that. We're also going to announce our prize winner. All right, here we go. Bobby Ray the Kazoo Man.
Skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. We will tell the world about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of happy cheer again. Happy, happy days are here again. Other night, I guessed it right away. I am glad to say, this riddle that he gave to me, I will give to you. And if you think you're smart like me, let's see what you can do. Round on the ends and high in the middle, tell me if you know. Don't you think that's a cute little riddle? Round on the ends and high in the middle, you can't find it on a map. Look high and low. The O's are round and high in the middle. O-H-I-O, that's the riddle. Round on the ends and high in the middle. O-I-O. Tried all their might just the other night. I got this riddle down by heart, and I ain't no fool. I'm gonna teach this riddle to all the kids at school. Round on the ends and high in the middle, tell me if you know. Don't you think that's a cute little riddle? Round on the ends and high in the middle, you can't find it on a map. If you look high and low, the O's are round and high in the middle. O-H-I-O, that's the riddle. Round on the ends and high in the middle. O-H-I-O. What's round on the ends and high in the middle? O-H-I-O.
Kazoo Man right here on WWGH Radio. Now, we are going to announce the winner of our big contest from earlier, and then we're going to go back to President Warren G. Harding and Bobby Ray, the Kazoo Man. By the way, Bobby Ray does have a Facebook page, BobbyRayTheKazooMan.com. Check that out. You won't go wrong. And a TikTok. All kinds of interesting stuff on the TikTok that you will not want to miss. KazooMan.com as well. There you go. All right, here goes the big drawing. Okay, Bobby Ray, pick a number between 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Pick a number between 1 and 7.
4.
Number 4. Our big winner today is Fred Saul. Fred, give me a call here at the station at 740-383-9944. You can have 2 tickets to the Columbus Zoo, 2 tickets to Zumbezi Bay, or 2 tickets to the Wilds. Fred Saul is our winner today, and we now return to the front porch here on South Prospect Street and President Warren G. Harding.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I first of all want to thank you for your patience and your endurance to endure the rain coming down and being here in spite of that. Some of you sitting in your automobiles, more of you under umbrellas out there in the yard and in the street. I thank you for sharing your time with me and being together today. So the speech I'm going to share with you now is a speech I made on election night, November 2nd, 1920. The election results were coming in as we were listening to the radio on KDKA, and after a while it became clear that we really were looking for a landslide win. A landslide that, as it turned out, would be the biggest landslide since the start of the two-party system in the United States. So I made a speech, and I'll share that with you now. So here we are. It's November 2nd, this is election night, 1920, and as I face my opponent, Governor Cox, for the presidency, I remind you that the polls are open until 7:30. So if you haven't voted yet, please exercise your responsibility as a United States citizen, especially all of you ladies who are going to be voting for the very first time. Tennessee was the last state to ratify the 18th Amendment less than 3 months ago. I want to thank members of the Daughters of the American Revolution for their tireless efforts to pass this milestone in our civil liberties. Now, by a strange coincidence, today is also my birthday, and many of my supporters think that the 29th American presidency would make a fine present. We're tracking the incoming voting returns on the KDKA radio broadcast from Pittsburgh, and to my knowledge, on one of the only 3 or so radios in Marion County, and through a special telegraph line that's been installed at our campaign headquarters in the house next door to our home on Mount Vernon Avenue. It's going to be a late night tonight. We don't expect final results until about 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. But the campaign is over. And now that I'm home again among friends, I feel much more at liberty to speak to you a bit more informally tonight, if I may. Besides, you've heard me bloviating at full force during my campaign speeches. It's clear that Governor Cox and I have vastly different campaign styles. Governor Cox and his running mate, an undersecretary of the Navy that nobody ever heard of, Franklin D. Roosevelt, spent a frenzied 2 months barnstorming across the country for rallies and train station speeches and formal addresses here and there. They call that a campaign. I call it an undignified pandering for the presidency as he swept the country bragging about his qualifications. So rather than fanning out to win over the people, our campaign took a different approach. We brought the people to Marion in our own front porch. And over the course of that campaign, more than 600,000 of them, not all at once, of course, 1,000 here, 5,000 there, but on busy campaign days, the population of Marion more than doubled. And tonight, I want to publicly thank the citizens of Marion for supporting our campaign in so many heroic ways. The welcoming committees at the train depot, since nearly everybody came by train. Welcoming committees at the city limits, on every road leading into town, greeting people arriving by automobile. The decorating committee that built Victory Way, festooning the streets all the way from the train depot to our home, block after block after block, with regal golden columns topped with eagles, and of course, my portrait. Red, white, and blue bunting was adorning the storefronts, committees, everywhere, providing food, lodging for guests. They'd set up information booths, emergency restaurants, because there was not enough places for people to eat, first aid stations for people who needed aid, the women of the households throughout the city who opened their homes and their hearts to host thousands of visitors from across the nation. Four marching bands that were on duty at all times. Some were greeting trains at the station, others leading guests in parades through the center of town to our home. More bands playing at the newly constructed bandstand at the school downtown, hosting barbecues for 5,000 people at a time. I want to acknowledge my campaign manager, Will Hayes, and his entire staff, who were able to raise more than $8.1 million. That's nearly four times the money that Governor Cox's campaign could scrape together. And I want to thank Albert Lasker, my publicity agent. He arranged the first celebrity presidential endorsement of its kind. He brought to Marion the entire Chicago Cubs team. He brought in entertainer Al Jolson, Hollywood screen legends including Douglas Fairbanks, Lillian Russell, Mary Pickford, Lillian Gish. No brighter stars than that. Among the campaign, there was some inevitable controversy. Shortly after my nomination at the Republican convention in Chicago, one reporter broke a story, he thought it was an exclusive, that Mrs. Harding had been seen with a fortune teller, as though that was some kind of horrific scandal. Well, let me clear that up for you tonight. Yes, Lawrence occasionally consults with a clairvoyant, Madam Marcia, and I've gone on record that I fully support Florence in that. No, Madam Marcia isn't a gypsy who conducts spooky seances. Madam Marcia is a trusted advisor to the most powerful people in Washington. First Lady Edith Wilson, U.S. Congressmen, Senators, Supreme Court Justices. And before the convention, Madam Marcia predicted to Florence that I would win the Republican nomination. So, there's one accurate forecast. Later, she predicted that I would be elected president. Two for two. But she also predicted that I wouldn't survive my first term and that my presidency would come to a tragic end. Well, I stand before you on this porch today, never feeling better. So that just goes to show that even the most trusted psychics sometimes are just full of poppycock. In closing tonight, I'd not be true to myself if I did not recognize my own limited ability to meet your expectations as president. No man is big enough to run this great republic. It never has been and never will be. But I will gladly give all that is in me, all of heart, soul, mind, and abiding love for this country. All of that in service to our common cause. One cannot give more. So in the words of the author who wrote Rip Van Winkle, here's to your good health and your family's good health, and may you all live long and prosper.
Again, that's President Warren G. Harding giving a front porch speech from the front porch here at WWGH Radio on South Prospect Street. If you're driving by in this horrible, horrible rainstorm, that's what you would be seeing right now. We are going to turn to Bobby Ray the Kazoo Man for two more tunes. Take it away, Bobby Ray.
This is the number one song in 1920. Ha 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 ha! always thinking of you, Margie. I'll tell the world I love you. Don't forget your promise to me. I have bought a home and ring and everything for Margie. You are my inspiration. Days are never blue. After all is said and done, there really is only one. Margie, Margie, it's you. Margie, I'm always thinking of you, Margie. I'll tell the world I love you, don't forget your promise to me. I have bought a home and ring and everything for Margie. You are my inspiration, days are never blue. After all is said and done, there really is only one. Margie, Margie, it's you. From the west was the bestest of the Bronco boys. He could ride, he could glide over prairies like an arrow. And every maid in the glade was afraid he would trade his little heart away. So each little peach made a nice little speech of love to him. Pony boy, won't you be my pony boy? Don't say no, here we go. Hop across the plain. Marry me, ride away with you. Giddy up, whoa, my pony boy. So they say came to stay a fluffy Russell girl. She made eyes, she surprised, and he found his heart was lasso. When he thought he was caught, how he fought, but she taught the pony boy to love. But he balked when she talked of the trip to New York, so she sang to him. Pony boy, won't you be my pony boy? Don't say no, here we go, off across the plain. Marry me, ride away with you. Giddy up, whoa, my pony boy. Pony boy, won't you be my pony boy? Don't say no, here we go, off across the plain. Marry me, ride away with you. Giddy up, whoa, my pony boy. Giddy up, whoa, my pony boy.
All right, we're back here at WWGH Radio again. You're listening to Bobby Ray the Kazoo Man and President Warren G. Harding on the front porch here of South Prospect Street. Let's go back to the President, Warren G. Harding, who's also going to answer a listener question, I believe. Go ahead, President.
All right. Again, greetings to all of you standing in the rain. It's just pouring harder and harder. That music was wonderful, wasn't it? It just goes to show how much fun some great music from this era can be. I paused for a moment because I was just slipped a note. Madam Marcia is here with Florence out there in the yard. And this is from Madam Marcia. She had a vibration from the future. And I don't understand this, but I'll just say it. Madam Marcia wanted to know if John F. Kennedy took my speech. President John F. Kennedy. Now, I know nothing about this. We're talking way into the future. I know nothing about that. Madam Marcia apparently does, and thinks that this Kennedy person may have appropriated parts of my speech that, with thoughts that really weren't his. I'm flattered at one level, but at another level, I understand President Kennedy is a Democrat. So to imagine a Democrat appropriating some of my thoughts 100 years in the future is somewhat disturbing. Well, imagine where we are. But imagine this. We're all in Washington, D.C. We're standing before the U.S. Capitol building. I'm standing ready to deliver my inaugural address. I've just been sworn in on the east portico of the Capitol building. And in front of me, all down the mall, all down the side streets, as far as you can see, are in the estimate of 100,000 people standing by to hear my inaugural address. Now, I've got a good voice, and I'm used to projecting to audiences without amplification. 100,000 people in an audience is a bit beyond my capabilities. So here's a first, and this has never happened before. In 1921, the Bell Telephone Company arrived on site here at the Capitol a couple days ago, and they set up truck after truck of sound equipment. It's called public address equipment. Trucks filled with glowing tubes and a microphone and gigantic speakers in huge boxes facing the audience so that my voice would be picked up electronically, amplified, and boomed out to an audience of thousands and thousands and thousands of people without me ever having to strain my voice. That is a miracle of modern 1921 technology. So with that in mind, imagine you're in this audience, facing the Capitol. I'm up on the marble steps. I've just taken the oath of office. And I did so with my hand on George Washington's Bible. And after so, I deliver this address. Standing in this presence, mindful of the solemnity of this occasion, feeling the emotions which no one may know until he senses the great weight of responsibility for himself, I must utter my belief in the divine inspiration of our founding fathers. Surely there must have been God's intent in the making of this new republic. We have seen the world rivet its hopeful gaze on the great truths on which our founders wrought. We have seen civil, human, and religious liberty verified, glorified. In the beginning, countries of the old world scoffed at our experiment, while today our foundations of political and social belief stand unshaken, a precious inheritance to ourselves and an inspiring example of freedom and civilization to all mankind. Today, better than ever before, we know the aspirations of humankind, and we share them. We have come to a new realization of our place in the world, and a new appraisal by our nation, by the world. The unselfishness of these United States is a thing proven. Our devotion to peace for ourselves and for the world is well established. The success of our popular government rests wholly upon the deliberate, intelligent, dependable participation of all Americans. America is ready to encourage, eager to initiate, anxious to participate in any effort likely to lessen the probability of war and promote the brotherhood of mankind. Because we cherish ideals of justice and peace, we aspire to a high place in the moral leadership of civilization. Mankind needs a worldwide benediction of understanding. It is needed among individuals. It's needed among peoples. It's needed among governments. And it will inaugurate an era of good feeling to make the birth of a new order so essential to peace. Perhaps we can make no more helpful contribution by example than to prove a republic's capacity to emerge from the wreckage of war. When the governments of the earth shall have established a freedom like our own and shall have sanctioned the pursuit of peace as we have practiced it, I believe the last sorrow and the final sacrifice of international warfare will have finally been written. Let me speak to the maimed and wounded soldiers who are present today, and through them, convey to their comrades the gratitude of the Republic for their sacrifices in its defense. A generous country, a grateful nation, will never forget the services you rendered. Our supreme task is the resumption of our onward, normal way. Reconstruction, readjustment, restoration, all these must follow, and I intend to hasten them. Let me repeat for our nation, we shall give no people just cause to make war upon us. We hold no national prejudices. We entertain no spirit of revenge. We do not hate. We do not covet. We dream of no conquest. We don't boast of armed superiority. Yet, there is something inherently wrong. There is something out of accord with the ideals of a representative democracy. When one portion of our citizenship turns its activities to maximizing profit during a defensive war, while another is fighting, sacrificing, bleeding, and dying for national preservation. A regret for the mistakes of yesterday must not blind us to the tasks of today. War has never left such an aftermath. There has been staggering loss of life and measureless wastage of materials and resources. Today we can reduce the war's expenditures, and we will. Today we can strike at war taxation, and we will. We need a rigid and yet a sane economy, an economy combined with fiscal justice, prudence, and thrift, which are so essential to this trying hour and reassuring for our future. Our most dangerous tendency is to expect too much of government and at the same time do for it too little. We contemplate the immediate task of putting our public household in order. It's up to all of us. But I speak for administrative efficiency. I speak for lightened tax burdens. I stand for sound commercial practices, for adequate credit facilities throughout our banking systems, for sympathetic concern for all the agricultural problems, for the emission of unnecessary interference of government with business, and for more efficient business within government administration. With all of this must attend a mindfulness toward economic justice that will be squared with the purposes of all of us as righteous people. With the nationwide introduction to womanhood of our political life, this just happened, we may now count upon women's intuitions, her intelligence, her influence to strengthen our social order. And there's no stronger way to do that than to vote. And women, by the hundreds of thousands, did just that. My most reverent prayer for America is for peace, with its rewards distributed among the inspirations of equal opportunity for all. I acclaim an era of good feeling and dependable prosperity, with all of the blessings that come with it. It's been proven again and again, we cannot, while throwing our markets open to the world, maintain American standards of living and opportunity. Today as never before, when people are seeking trade restoration and expansion, we must adjust our tariffs to the new order. We seek participation in the world's markets because we know full well we cannot sell where we do not buy. Opportunity is calling. It's calling for a new era in production, a new era in transportation, in trade. We shall answer it best by meeting the demand of our home market, by promoting self-reliance in production at home, by promoting enterprise, genius, efficiency, to carry our cargoes to the markets of the world. Ours ought to be a country free from great blotches of distressed poverty. We must find a way to guard against the perils of unemployment. We want an America of homes. Homes illumined with hope, illumined with happiness, where the cradle of American childhood will be rocked under conditions so wholesome, so hopeful, that no blight may touch it. There is no shortcut to making these ideals into glad realities. Service is the supreme commitment of American life. I pledge an administration where all agencies of government are called to serve. One cannot stand before you and be unmindful of the tremendous responsibility ahead. If this is my responsibility alone as president for America, for the America of tomorrow, I would shrink away from that burden. But here in the U.S., there are 100 millions with common concern and shared responsibility, all answerable to God and the country. This republic summons all to their duty, and I invite co-cooperation from each and every one. I accept my part with single-mindedness of purpose and humility, humility of spirit. I ask for the favor and guidance of God in His heaven. With that, I'm unafraid, and I confidently face the future. I've taken the solemn oath of office on that passage of the Holy Bible where it's asked, "What doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God?" This I pledge to God and my country.
All right, Bobby Ray is going to go out there now and wrap it up with two songs for us as we continue on here on WWGH Radio. Again, that was President Warren Harding giving a speech on our front porch here on South Prospect Street. Here goes Bobby Ray, the Kazoo Man. How about it? Let's turn it over to Bobby Ray. Go ahead, Bobby Ray.
She's out of sight. I talked to her across the telephone. I never met my honey, but she's mine, alright. So take my tip and leave this gal alone. Every single morning you can hear me yell. Hey, Central, fix me up along the line. They connect me to my baby and I rings the bell. And this is what I say to baby mine. kiss my wire.
Baby, my heart's on fire. If you refuse me,
honey, you lose me, and then you'll be left alone. So, baby, telephone and tell me I'm your own.
Because I got my babe's address. He pasted in the lining of my hat. I am mighty scared, cause if the lines get crossed, will separate me from my baby mine. Then some other guy will win her and my game is lost. And so each day I shout along the line. Hello my baby, hello my honey, hello my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss, my wire. Baby, my heart's on fire. If you refuse me, honey, you lose me, and then you'll be left alone. So, baby, telephone and tell me I'm your own.
Hey, thank you for clapping by. Look at that. So he's waving that other car. Here's one from, also from Harding. From the Harding, from the Harding era.
Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, I don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Yes, ma'am, we've decided. No, ma'am, ain't gonna hide it. Yes, ma'am, you're invited now. By the way, when we reach that preacher, I will say with feeling, yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, I don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Sir, that's my baby. No, sir, I don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Yes, ma'am, we decided. No, ma'am, we ain't gonna hide it. Yes, ma'am, you're invited now. By the way, when we reach that preacher, I will say, hey, hey, hey. Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, I don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now.
Thank you, good luck to you. They had somebody come out in the rain to take pictures.
All right, that was Bobby Ray, the Kazoo Man. Have Warren Harding sign us off for Memorial Day. Adam, you want to go let him know? Warren Harding, sign us off for Memorial Day weekend.
Sign us off for a minute or two. Just close it out.
For Memorial Day. All right. For Memorial Day, for everybody here at WWGH Radio, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Has the distinction of being twice crowned Miss Ohio in 1931 and 1938, and Miss America in 1938. Meskey was christened Mary.